Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Given the success of companies founded in Silicon Valley and that of the entrepreneurs who started companies like PayPal, Tesla, LinkedIn, and more, every city in America wants to find a way to emulate that success. Raleigh stands out as a top metro for tech employment gains over the years, but so do we. Charlotte ranks ninth in the nation, and where Silicon Valley has its PayPal mafia, made up of the company's founders, Charlotte has what is becoming known as the Passport Mafia. Passport started in 2010 and became a place where several employees got enough firsthand experience to go out on their own. So what is the tech or entrepreneur ecosystem like here? And when you look at Charlotte from the outside, are we considered a good place to create a technology or other kind of startup? Are we viewed as a tech entrepreneur's playground? For that discussion, we invited the founder of the company that gave rise to the phrase Passport Mafia. Christian Gutierrez is the CEO and co-founder of Passport, who then went on to co-found Civic Eye, another Charlotte-based startup, only to return to Passport as its CEO. Teddy Fitzgibbons is CEO and co-founder of Streetfair, and Simone Graham is a staff writer at the Charlotte Business Journal, covering banking and financial services, technology, entrepreneurs, and small business. You have your beat cut out for you, Simone. Welcome, everybody. Good morning.
Good morning. Good
morning. Morning. So before we get too deeply into this topic, let me find out about the companies we're talking to here. Christian, let me start with you, because I believe it was your co-founder, Bob Yoakum, if that's how you say his last name. How do you say his last name, by the way?
Yoakum.
Yoakum. Okay. Well, boy, was I wrong. Okay. So your co-founder, Bob Yoakum, coined the term Passport Mafia because of the parallels that he saw between your company and the mafia created by PayPal. So what was it about your company that has spawned 20 people who struck out on their own to start up 13 other companies?
Oh, gosh. Thank you, Mike, for the question. And I have to start with culture, the culture of our business that we built, and I'm going to put a pin in the word we and come back to it, was one that fostered grit, perseverance, determination, hunger, excitement, passion. I can continue just on and on, but really the culture that our initial team put in place was one that thrived on pushing one another to be the greatest version of themselves, personally and professionally, and supporting the idea that you can be wrong, and that is a good thing. And you know, we set these principles out early on in our business, and one of them was this idea of know what you don't know. You know, let's not have a culture where we pretend to know things, right? So just embedded in the day-to-day and the projects and the customer interactions was this hunger of discovery. And by way of that, this flywheel started to spin, not just improving the business we were building, which was Passport. And I'll be excited to come back and discuss and describe that, what we do in the market. But one that started asking questions about the broader universe around this country, around other communities and other areas that might need improvement.
So you have this culture that you talked about, and I don't want to talk more about that because it seems you're following in the footsteps of a lot of inventors who have said it's good to fail because you learn from your failure, so don't be afraid of it. But aside from having this culture of where it's okay to fail and you strive to be your best self, you're going back once again to your co-founder, Bob Yoakum. He told the Business Journal that those who were part of Passport's early years had a front row seat to the reality of building a company, learning that it's hard, but possible. I'm just curious, because that seems to be the case anywhere you have a startup. It's hard, but possible. And people who come into that company, no matter what it is, early on, have that front row seat. What made yours different? Just the culture?
Bob makes such an incredible point here. I'll start off by just saying most startups fail, to be very clear. Like multiple nines, 99 plus percent of startups just don't make it, period. Okay. And then when you take the segment of the ones that do well, that eventually become profitable, that eventually become thriving businesses, you can segment those into ones that sort of were just a rocket ship from day one and made it, crushed, became a unicorn. Others that, did well, but things were difficult. And others that, were a roller coaster day in and day out. And perhaps some of the other buckets that I just described would consider their journey to be the latter. But I think the latter journey in our business is what made us special. So if I can double-click on Bob's commentary of hard but possible. Building this business has been a roller coaster, high highs, low lows. Just when you think you're winning and we're taking over and customers are excited, something happens and you get punched in the gut. And the way that we reacted from that adversity, from those trials that we faced on a consistent basis, built a level of grit in our business. And Mike, the reason I'm describing this is because everyone had that front row seat, as Bob said perfectly. And so what people realized was that, hey, if they decided to take a step on their own to go build something great, that the first, the second, the fifth time they got punched in the gut, the journey's not over. You can continue to fight and climb and push for what you believe in.
And Simone, you've written about the influence that this particular company, Passport, has had on the entrepreneurial scene here in Charlotte. You say that they, quote, cultivated a thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem. How so?
I would say that Passport, they really just did a good job at just having startups that created other startups. They had their impact extended beyond its alumni. They contributed to Charlotte's emergence as a tech hub with a stronger network of mentors and resources. I would also say that they just demonstrate that Charlotte can produce high growth tech firms, inspiring more entrepreneurs and increasing investor confidence in the Charlotte area.
Yeah,
I
and
want
sorry,
go ahead,
Mike, go ahead.
Teddy. Go ahead. No.
Well, I was going to add to that. I think from kind of an insider's point of view, one of the things that culturally Passport did really well, that came obviously from the leadership there, was one of empowering kind of young, hungry talent, more so than most. And specifically being able to or giving team members a lot of autonomy and a lot of authority earlier in their career than maybe on paper would have made sense was standard at Passport. And I think if you look at the founders, the ex-Passport founders that have started companies, myself included, we were all given opportunities that on paper we may not have earned in a traditional sense at Passport. And that let us get some of that imposter syndrome that every founder faces kind of out of the way early and built the confidence that, like, maybe it's not that crazy for me to step into, an uphill battle or kind of crazy odds, and take a big swing.
It should be mentioned, and I think you kind of alluded to it, that Teddy Fitzgibbons, who is the CEO of Street Fair and the co-founder of Street Fair, started with the Passport and moved on to establish his own company. And I'm curious how many of the methods, practices, attitudes, philosophies that you encountered at Passport you've carried over into your own
Yeah.
business.
Thanks, Mike. And
Hey, Teddy, hold on. Sorry, I have to hijack here. I think the story of Teddy joining Passport is an interesting and critical entry point to this next topic. Teddy, can you share a little bit there?
I probably had a unconventional route to Passport, but I was actually I was living and working in New York at a venture capital firm that ended up investing in Passport. And I had been the one sort of championing that deal internally. It was a marathon process. I got to know, Bob, Christian and Brad and a bunch of the management team very well, and just fell in love with that kind of culture even from the outside, and knew that, you know, that was where I was excited to work. And we were in town for a board meeting, and I sort of floated this idea to Bob ahead of time of like, what if I worked here full time? And you know, Bob went into this like, okay, here's what we're gonna do and all this stuff. And I was like, all right, this already feels like home. My interview with KG was like, he took me to a CrossFit gym, didn't ask me any questions about work, but was just like, wanted to see how I'd react, you know, out of my comfort zone. And I think that was a big part of the culture of like, all right, let's throw people into different situations and make the bet that the team's going to figure it out. And then Mike, to your question on what have we carried over at Street Fair and what do I think is really important? You know, Street Fair is a company of like young, hungry, capable folks. And we try to have that same mindset and belief that, you know, it's less about hiring for experience or who has led exactly this type of team before, and more who has the mindset to figure it out on their own. And so we really try to build and emulate that as well here.
So you're two very different companies, but I guess you're both technology reliant. Street Fair, what does Street Fair do?
Yeah, Street Fair is a marketplace for neighborhoods to find and hire local home service businesses. So think, you know, plumbing, landscaping, things like that. What really sets Street Fair apart is homeowners can see which businesses their neighbors use and recommend. And they can also see which companies are scheduled to do work in their neighborhood and actually join in on those existing services that are happening in their community, oftentimes for group discounts as more neighbors join in together on the same service.
And Passport?
Passport partners with cities all across the country and in Canada to support their parking and transportation programs with digital infrastructure that allow them to process transactions for their community, manage rules and regulations on the curb, on the street, and ultimately improve the community experience.
Teddy was working for a venture capitalist, which is how the two of you connected, because you were looking for money. And evidently he believed in you enough to give you that money and then jump ship and come to you and work with you. So he did not begin as an entrepreneur. Christian, what was your experience prior to taking the leap into starting your own company?
Oh, gosh. One thing I will say is, you know, the way I'll get to your question, Mike, I promise. But when we interview folks, literally from day one to today, we dig quite deeply into their backgrounds, what motivates them, you know, what they would define as success, how they think about family, what their professional goals are, these sorts of things. And we learned pretty early on that Teddy's been an entrepreneur for a very long time. He was building nonprofits when he was in high school, and you know, just had this grit and grind about him. So his entrepreneurship story goes way back. So I just want to give Teddy that credit. For me personally, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't just take a minute and talk about my co-founder, Bob Joachim. In my career, you know, a lot of people talk about internships. Most people don't talk about this concept of apprenticeship. You know, it's something like early 1900s, right? But for me, I've had a very unique opportunity in my career where for about a decade I got to apprentice with my co-founder, my personal mentor and best friend, Bob Joachim, who's recently returned to our company as our executive chairman and supporting in various different ways. And I have to mention him and just give him so much thanks for the opportunity. When Teddy talked about giving people opportunities early on, Bob gave me that opportunity early on to dive in headfirst.
And I got to tell you, apprenticeships go back to the 1300s, I think. So we'll come right back and talk more
about
that.
Way earlier than I thought. Yeah.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about entrepreneurship and tech entrepreneurship and where Charlotte sits in the pantheon of cities competing for all these go-getters. Christian Gutierrez is one of them. He's the CEO and co-founder of Passport. Teddy Fitzgibbons is the CEO and co-founder of Streetfare, and Simone Graham writes about all this stuff in the pages of the Charlotte Business Journal. Simone, since you do talk to a lot of these people, and because both of the gentlemen we have on the panel here this morning are young, and they started younger, I'm curious, as you talk to these people, are most of them young? Most of these young entrepreneurs, are they young?
Yeah, I will say most of them are pretty young whenever I do talk to them. They're freshly starting out their business, or either they're in the early stages of their business, and they're either new to Charlotte or just have been here for a short amount of time. And so they come to Charlotte because Charlotte is really attractive when it comes to just, people say that it is affordable here. People are attracted to the area because it does have a strong talent pipeline as well, a strong business climate. So these are reasons that younger small business owners or just aspiring business owners are just really coming to the Charlotte area.
And when you talk to entrepreneurs in the course of your reporting, when you talk to the successful ones as opposed to people who have pipe dreams that may not pan out, is there something in the character, in the approach of the successful ones that you can spot?
I would say that the ones that are successful or just seem like they have that drive and that appetite to be successful and thrive are the ones that aren't afraid to mess up, aren't afraid to have challenges, the ones that flat out say that they've experienced these tribulations and trials that have really set them back, but it's really just how they overcome them. So they speak about how they've overcome these challenges. And whenever I hear about just how they've overcame those challenges, that's whenever I can really hear that what they've been through is really what has caused them to really become successful and really just become a thriving startup.
Teddy, Kristen alluded to the fact that you've been kind of an entrepreneur since high school, but you did start out working for somebody else. And when you work for someone else, you have a job. When you start your own company, everything falls on your shoulders. It's your venture. It is your life. I'd like to know how you describe the difference in the way you approach that, the way it makes you feel, the way it makes you think. Because now suddenly you are responsible not only for yourself, but people who work for you. And perhaps because it takes money to start some of these, you have a lot of money to pay back or investors to fund going forward. So what, if anything, prepared you for that difference?
Mike, that's a great question. It's one I think about a lot and kind of share my thoughts with aspiring founders and folks who ask. And I would say first, from a mindset perspective, being a founder is the opposite of kind of the glamorous profile that you often hear about. And you really have to want to build something from scratch. If you don't take kind of irrational joy from building something on your own and kind of solving those hard problems, like, it's just, the juice isn't going to be worth the squeeze. Because it's not a good job. It's an amazing, rewarding job if you're kind of wired that way. And I think I knew from early on that I was, and I haven't wanted to do anything else other than start a company. So it felt natural when I did. But I would say the biggest sort of specific difference between being an employee at an established company and starting a company is what you alluded to, Mike. It's the lack of any infrastructure around you. So there is no, hey, run that contract by legal before you send it, or like check with finance to see if that pricing makes sense. Like, you are finance, you are legal, you are HR, and there is no one, other than advisors, mentors, which is why it's so helpful. You can get that feedback on. You have to be comfortable with, like, well, I'm going to read about, HR law in North Carolina and decide if this makes sense or not. You have to be ready for that.
So, Kristen, you went through all this yourself when you started Passport, and you brought people on board. I'm not sure how big your company was when Teddy worked for it, but you have been responsible, as I said, for spinning off about 20 people who have started their own companies now. Is that a good thing from your point of view? Because it takes a lot of money, time, and other kinds of investment to bring people into your company, help them understand the culture, help them thrive. Now you've set them up to leave, and they do. So is that a good thing?
It is probably the thing that I am most proud of in my career. And I think I can speak for Bob with the same commentary. You know, to see people step off, take the risk, use the learnings, apply first principles, and build something great. And in some cases, folks that failed, great. These things are great. Great opportunities for them, and just creating value in the market and the economy is I think a beautiful thing. But I'm also a really deep believer in capitalism and these forces. So. Yeah,
Mike, I got to tell a story around just like what it was like from the culture and the mindset around starting your own business within Passport. There was one of my colleagues at the time who has since started a company, Devin Patel, who's the founder of On Brand. When we were both working at Passport, we were kind of hanging out outside of hours. It was probably like midnight at the time. And he turns to me, he's like, so do you want to start a company? I was like, yes, I'm thinking kind of the next 3 to 5 years, I'm going to start a company. And his exact words to me were, that's so dumb. You need to start a company in the next 6 months. And it was just like, whoa, just the urgency of like, no, if you want to do something, you have to do it right now. And I would say just the culture, you know, even from Bob and Christian that you talked about was like, yeah, give us a couple years at Passport and we're going to give you the experience and the platform to go do this on your own.
In talking to you and in talking to other people over in past programs who have become entrepreneurs, several of them, including you, Teddy, have said, I want to start a company. They didn't say, I want to start a company that brings together service providers to homeowners. They didn't say, I want to start a company that deals with the ins and outs of parking and collecting revenue for cities, etc. They just want to start a company. What is it about starting this company that you don't even know what it's going to do that is enticing?
I think it's just the feeling, it's the adrenaline, and the ability to make a huge impact every morning, you know, to every evening. It's, you know, I never want another real job again. That's just part of, I think, what kind of drives you. And yeah, I don't know what my next one will be, but it will be something.
So I like the way you phrase this question. Like, this sounds like, you know, if a buddy wants to go get a tattoo, well, what tattoo? Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'll figure it out. But you should probably know before you go get that tattoo. I think there's a little bit of a different nuance here. And that is this wiring of problem solving. I mean, I'm in a text thread with 15 of these guys and gals, and even our current team at Passport. We're constantly pitching each other ideas. I mean, it's nonstop. I can probably look in my text messages and look at the last 7 days and see 5 pretty solid ideas that can make for viable businesses, right? And so I think it, you know, this idea that Teddy or Morgan or David Singletary, Ben, these folks that have gone off and started these great businesses, if they are already wired to the idea that I want to go build something, then they're constantly looking, right? The world's created by people who understand that the boxes that are there, those walls are all movable, right? And so if people are already wired that way, then when something strikes them, then they know it's go time.
So Simone, you talk to these folks every day. Has this not rubbed off on you? You still go to work every morning for somebody else. And has none of this encouraged you to step out on your own and start your own company? And if not, why not? Does it take a certain kind of person to be able to want to do this?
So I've heard many stories of just how people have wanted to, or why they wanted to start a business, what all they have been through when it comes to starting a business. And I will say that it does, just hearing their drive, their passion, their mission and vision for their companies, those are reasons that kind of make me also think about just, you know, what is something that I can be passionate about and also just help others with as well. So just hearing other people's grit and their grind, I will say that does rub off. But the challenges that these companies face and business owners face, especially when first starting out, I will say that it does provide a little bit of pause. But just seeing that how they end up being successful in the end, that is a reason just to maybe why not try it out.
You know, when I was starting out 150 years ago, you had to be a wealthy person to own a radio station or a television station. So it was not practical. If you wanted to be in the business, you got a job working for one of those people. And the same is true, I think, for people who work in print. But today, with digital technology, I could start a podcast. And in the next, I could just walk out of here right now and start a podcast in 5 minutes. And you could do the same with a Substack, Simone. Why don't we?
I will say that sometimes it is harder for people. It's not as flexible for people to, especially if they are having a full-time job at the time, it's hard for them to kind of work on also launching a business at the same time. So time is also a factor. And then also just funding as well. Money is also a major factor when it comes to starting a business. So people are apprehensive when it comes to that because of those two main things. So it does take a little bit of just really planning, and it takes that flexibility to have the amount of time to be able to just potentially start a business. Well,
here's one reason why, because I had a small business for a while that ended up being pretty successful, much to my surprise and even chagrin from time to time. But you work really long, hard hours. You work weekends, 7 days a week. The clock does not stop at 5 o'clock. You have to get, because you are everything. You are the legal department. If you're not doing what you started the business to do, you're in the back office doing payroll, or you're doing paying the bills or whatever. And in many cases, you take very low or no salary for a time period, and that time period may come and go over time. You may work for a while for money, and then for a while you have to pay your employees so you don't pay yourself. Was that your experience, Teddy?
Certainly the hours, certainly the kind of grind and dedication, and the, you know, comfort with constant failure, because it is, you are mostly failing. You're just hopefully failing a little bit less as you make progress. So yes, I think that has been my experience so far. You have to be mentally prepared. You know, I'll say it again, starting a company is not a good job. But for, you know, folks wired this way, it's sort of like the only job, that you'd want. But it's a challenge, and there are a lot of sacrifices that come with it.
And Christian,
you know, Mike, I think there's a really good analogy and line that you can extend from essentially the American legal system and construct that a business is a person, right? Like legally, a business is technically treated as a person. It's why often when folks start these businesses, they talk about them as babies. That's their baby. Right, this mentality of this is a thing that needs to grow. I have to feed it. I have to be around it all day and all night. And it's not a job for these founders. I mean, Teddy keeps making the joke, and I think he's right. It's not, if you consider it like, hey, this is my my night, but this is a thing that's going to pay for my lifestyle. This sort of like that mentality. If you approach it that way, you might struggle. If you approach it with, gosh, I can build something great and see this thing go live beyond me. After me, it's going to continue to provide value to society.
And Kristen, your partner, Bob, told the Business Journal that there were times when the two of you and maybe the other founders, if there are other founders, took no salary for periods of time to make the thing work and keep it afloat. And you were also able to attract talent at below market pay scales. I'm curious as to how you did that, why people would come to work at below market pay for a startup, which has no guarantee of success.
Fair. So I'll take the response here in two parts. One, would also be remiss if I didn't mention that Bob and I are both second generation Americans. We watched our parents not just leave their communities behind to create and establish a foundation for their family, for future generations, and see the hard work that went into that. You know, that sort of grit is very much embedded in my personal culture and North Star. And, when I think about the folks that that took leaps to join us. Yes, we took little to no salaries. I mean, during a pandemic, we reduced salaries. I mean, you do whatever it takes. You do whatever it takes for the business to survive, period. But for folks to join our team at below market salary, certainly early on, I would say that's not the case today. We're much later stage than most of the mafia businesses. They're joining with equity options. And what that means is they have the option to buy equity in the business that will likely be worth significantly more at a later, if you survive, if you continue to grow and do the right things as a business, it could mean a very large and windfall. And I think that's one of the things that Passport did incredibly well for this market was establish a culture that everyone's an owner in the business. There have been some successful startups in Charlotte. At least one public company started right here. But the way that we thought about our business early on was ensure that everybody has some skin in the game, is excited for what could be in the future for their families as they build the value of the business. And with that trade-off, folks were willing to go ahead and take the leap.
I have about a minute left, and we have a questioner from a listener, Tim, who says, I'm a partner in a small software neo startup. What recommendations do your panelists have in finding funding to help grow a fully operational business in both employees, marketing, sales generation capabilities? And since you came from the world of venture capital, Teddy, I'll let you try to answer that question.
Specific, I guess it's hard to give specific, or sorry, it's hard to give general advice on finding capital. Despite my background, or maybe because of my background, I'm actually a fan of raising external capital as a last resort. It's often necessary. I think too often people approach it as, oh, if you want to have a startup, you need to raise money. I think the best companies are very efficient with their capital. And they don't need to raise external funding. Of course, there are a lot of business models out there that do require it. I think Streetfare is one. It's why we've raised capital. Focus on your differentiator and what you're going to build, and be really good at telling that story.
When we come back, I want to explore this finding capital idea because a lot of businesses need to have an infusion of cash at some point, probably in the beginning in many cases. We'll talk about how to do that, where to do it, whether Charlotte's a good place to do it, and more when we come back at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about entrepreneurship and whether or not Charlotte has the right climate. We're ninth in the nation. We have something going for us. We'll talk about that in a second. Christian Gutierrez is with us. He's the CEO and co-founder of Passport. Teddy Fitzgibbons, the CEO and co-founder of Streetfare. And Simone Graham writes about all of this and more as a staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal. Before the break, Simone, we were talking about the need for cash, startup cash, venture capitalist cash in some cases, but maybe not always. Everybody needs money to start a business, whether it's for equipment or whether it's for personnel, whatever it may be. How difficult is it to find that if you are a startup in Charlotte? Simone.
Yeah, so venture capital specifically is one of the main challenges that startup founders do face in Charlotte. Mainly because Charlotte is really known as being a financial services hub. So just rooted in that, investors here are really risk averse when it comes to especially investing in early stage startups. And so it has been a challenge when it comes to just finding other access or just other opportunities of funding here, especially for diverse business owners. There was only about 8% of VC funding that went to Charlotte startups, and then that's less than half of 1% nationwide as well. So that calls for a need for more equitable investment strategies in the Charlotte area, and then also just more structured networking and mentorship programs for these business owners that are just providing or are just experiencing challenges when it comes to accessing funding here in Charlotte.
So, Teddy, you were involved on the lending side or the investment side of venture capitalists going out and talking to entrepreneurs and deciding whether or not to invest in their ventures. What makes for a convincing pitch? What are the ingredients that intrigue a venture capitalist enough to say, okay, here's what I'll give you?
Particularly at the early stage. And I got this advice, again, despite my background, it felt like I was starting over, learning this from scratch when I did go out to raise for Street Fair. And the advice I got specifically on early stage, right? Because if you're an early startup that's looking for capital, it's very different than when you're a growth stage business like Passport is now and looking for capital. But early on, it is team. So, who you are as a founding team, and what you stand for, and it's opportunity. And those are mostly qualitative. So I think there's way too much emphasis. And my first version of the pitch deck for Street Fair had way too much emphasis on, numbers and strategies. And I got a lot of advice that was like, why do you want to build this? What insight do you have in the market? Is it a problem worth solving? And I think there's the value of storytelling early on is massively important to successfully accessing capital. And then the last bit, just that Simone I think nailed, is the it requires very risk tolerant investors and a risk tolerant investment business model. And there are way more of those businesses, venture funds and investors who have that risk profile outside of Charlotte than there are within Charlotte. But the world is smaller than it ever was. I don't think Charlotte founders should feel limited that they can only raise capital within Charlotte.
Okay. And Christian, if I got these numbers even close to being right, when you guys started, you started with a 90 million dollar investment, followed by several other infusions over time of cash. What was it about you and your co-founders and your idea that attracted so much money? That's a lot of money.
Oh gosh. That's a ton of money. All right. So we have raised over $200 million over the last 15 years, but the very first investment was checks written by friends and family. So I'll start, and that was to the tune of around $500,000 we were able to aggregate from folks that just believed in us. And so to Teddy's good point, in early stage businesses, you tend to bet on the jockey, not the horse. Right. There are so many good ideas that are started by folks who are never able to take that idea, find product market fit, and ultimately build a thriving business because perhaps that person wasn't wired to navigate the difficulties of building a business. And so folks did believe in us early on. And I would say in 2025, raising capital in Charlotte is slightly easier than it was back in 2010, 2011. But there were some folks that were active in the region. One person sits on our board today as an observer, Don Rainey. He was one of the leads at GrowTech Ventures. And so they were investing in the Southeast, in Charlotte, in North Carolina broadly. And since then, over the last 15 years, there are several funds that have started to turn their sights towards Charlotte as we've built an ecosystem of thriving entrepreneurs and folks that have been willing to step out on their own.
So many sources report, including you, Simone, that Charlotte is the ninth largest city in the country for tech employment gain. But that doesn't mean that tech startups are flourishing or that even that we have a remarkable number of tech startups. It just means that a lot of people who have tech skills are employed here. So how would you describe Charlotte in terms of the number of entrepreneurs who put their stake in the ground here?
Yeah, so I will say that just in Charlotte, the number of startups here that have really just flourished when it comes to just setting up a tech business here, and then just even in other industries across startups, they have really just I will say that there has been probably about a There's been a large increase over the past few years when it comes to just the amount of tech jobs here in Charlotte. There has been an increase when it comes to the amount of funding that's here in Charlotte. That I will say that there are a lot more funds, like Christian mentioned, over the past 15 years, there are a lot more funds in Charlotte that have really just targeted these companies that are really just trying to start in a thriving business here in Charlotte.
Is Charlotte, is North Carolina friendly to entrepreneurs, to startups? Are we any easier, any more encouraging, any cheaper, any more lenient in terms of rules, regulations, laws, etc., in North Carolina or Charlotte that make this an attractive place over another city in the Carolinas or elsewhere?
Yeah, so when we compare Charlotte to maybe a city like Raleigh, which is really flourishing when it comes to just especially research, and then also just for a center for technology and business, Charlotte really is thrives when it comes to the banking sector here, really just attracts talent here, and then also just access to infrastructure as well in Charlotte makes it appealing for local entrepreneurs. And then compared to Raleigh, they're really robust when it comes to the academic environment in Raleigh that helps businesses recruit talent and promotes innovation there. So they both have distinct benefits for entrepreneurs. But where Charlotte really is beneficial when it comes to startups is that it is it's a of course a larger city, and then it's also just has a robust it offers just tax incentives here as well, and then just it also just has increased corporate venture activity as well, and there of course are new funds emerging in the present day.
Teddy, I know that you have an answer to this
Yeah.
question and want to get in on this, and I want you to answer it, but I also want you and Christian to tell me, because both of your companies could do what you do anywhere in the world. Doesn't have to be Charlotte. Why Charlotte? So you can follow up on what
Yeah,
Simone said and then answer that question.
perfect. On Simone's point, I want to just also give her a shout out. You know, Mike, you asked about is Charlotte friendly to startups? And a huge part of like going 0 to 1 in the very beginning for a startup is establishing any credibility. And that applies to like getting your first couple customers or your first couple employees. You have to convince people that this thing that isn't real is actually real or will be real. And Simone, you know, you do a great job of covering the tech sector here. And without your beat, it would be so much harder to establish that credibility. You know, early days, I'm out like literally door knocking, telling people about Street Fair. Like, I've never heard of you. Eventually, you know, that ecosystem of people willing to tell the stories of local startups, as Simone does. I mean, Simone was our first coverage. I think for most of the founders I've talked with, Simone was kind of their first coverage. It just builds that credibility, and it's an incredibly important part of the ecosystem. You know, I think there are too few people willing to tell tech startup stories in Charlotte. And that's one of the most helpful things. So just quick shout out, Simone. Thank you for telling the tech startup stories, for giving some credibility in the very early days to a lot of companies. And then, Mike, to answer your question, you know, why Charlotte? Charlotte's a great place to call home. And from a building standpoint, there is no difference in the talent in Charlotte versus San Francisco or New York. The talent is here. All the variables are here, in my opinion. The culture is very different. And I think that's the thing to work on. I spent, you know, like 8 years in New York, and the average culture of work, grind or hustle or grit is totally different. And so that's part of what startups need to do in Charlotte, which is just to select for that cultural mindset, which is less common maybe here than in other cities. But there's no shortage of talent, and all the pieces are here. You just have to be willing to kind of build that culture of you know, push a boulder up a hill every day and start again tomorrow.
And with Passport, Christian, you help cities I'm not sure exactly how to, I should let you explain it, but you help cities capitalize on their parking situation, connecting people, getting making sure revenue streams come in. And you're not just in Charlotte. You're in Asheville, Albuquerque, Chicago, Toronto, Providence, Providence, Rhode Island, Peoria, Omaha, and other cities. Why you? Because there must be a 15 or 20 people who have apps on their phones from different companies that do some of what you do. What sets you apart?
It's a fantastic question. The theme of our conversation today has been around culture and people. And I think we lead with that when we go to partner with cities. You know, the days of going and buying software out of a box at Circuit City and then waiting for the next version to come out to drive up and buy the next box, like that's done, right? The world that Teddy and I live in and so many of these Passport Mafia folks is called software as a service. And you have to continue to earn that business every single day. And so when you build a customer-centric organization, your customers feel it and they will pick up the phone and call other potential customers and say, this company's a little different, right? Yeah, here are minimum requirements. Here's what you need to deliver for us. But this is how this company is going to take it to the next level, because they're always doing the things we've talked about on this show, problem solving, you know, hungry to go tackle and break through that next wall. I think, frankly, that's what sets us apart. I do need to pile on and shout out Simone and Charlotte Inno, Charlotte Business Journal. You know, these organizations have really wrapped their arms around the budding and growing community of technology founders and other types of business founders, which is huge and so critical to us. And I just have to say, you know, when I stepped away for a few years to go lead a public safety software company, you know, we invited Simone to come through. And even though I had already had some success for 10 years building another business, my heart was pounding through my chest before she walked through the door, because I know she's walking in and she sees like 12 of us working on computers, like just trying to figure this thing out and how we're going to go tackle the next problem. But she just comes in, she's hyped, she's excited. She wants to tell our story, and she did just that. And that was a non-zero factor for us having success in that business.
So I'm really short on time, but Simone, the love is flowing here. So here's a question that will flow to you as well. We may be ninth in the nation in Charlotte, and you report that we did experience a 1.5% increase in high-tech employment, marking a 31.5% growth, all these numbers on the radio, since 2019. In comparison, Austin, Texas, and Silicon Valley had rates of 1.2%. That's lower than Charlotte, but Raleigh-Durham is fifth with a growth rate of 4.3%. Why is North Carolina doing so well, and what does Charlotte need to do better?
So when it comes to just what North Carolina is doing well, so North Carolina has a strong business climate. North Carolina is also it has a strong, also talent workforce, as mentioned before. And then also it also just has a strong, diverse industries as well when it comes to different kind of industries, such as health tech, which is really growing here, logistics. So it does have those features to it. But what it could do better is just really when it comes to the limited diversity gap in funding, it could be better with that. And then also just for a need for more networking and mentorship programs, just an expansion of that. And then also just a more, when it comes to the risk averse investment culture as well, that also is something that could also decrease in the Charlotte area. And then also just the lack of local VC firms here. There are a lot of emerging firms here when it comes to VC, such as Charlotte Fund, which is really set on growing local businesses here and across the Carolinas. But Charlotte does just have initiatives in Charlotte that really needs to expand, especially when it comes to corporate investment.
So I have 15 seconds left. I want to hear one sentence answers from Teddy and Christian. I'll start with you, Teddy. What's the most important lesson you've learned?
Try again tomorrow. Just keep going. There's, you know, live to see another day, and you'll make it work.
Kristen.
Wow, outstanding. A different angle on almost the same answer. Be 1% better today than you were yesterday.
Wow. Christian Gutierrez gets the last word. He's the CEO and co-founder of Passport Labs. If you want to park, you have to go through him. Teddy Fitzgibbons, CEO and co-founder of Street Fair. You want somebody to come to the house to fix something, you have to go through him. Simone Graham with the Charlotte Business Journal. Thank you all for the hour.
Thank you, Mike.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.